Welcome to Torah Dimecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Lynn Kraft, and today we are studying Melachim Bet, Perek Gimel, Chapter 3. In the last Perek, Perek Bet, Chapter 2, we learned of Eliyahu is being taken from this earth whole, body and soul, leaving behind Elisha as his successor. As we discussed, Elisha has a very uniquely different leadership style than Eliyahu, which we'll actually experience firsthand in this Perek. The parak begins with Yehoram, the brother of Ahaziyahu and the son of another son of Achav ben Izabel, becoming king after Ahaziyahu's death from his illness without any direct heirs. That happened in Parak Aleph. And we're told in this parak, in Psukim Bet through Gimel, verses 2 and 3, that Yehoram wasn't as bad as Achav and Izabel, actually. He even got rid of the Baal shrine that his father had built. But he still followed in the ways of Yerovam ben Nevat, meaning Bnei Yisrael in Malchut Yisrael still worshipped Hashem in a foreign way, meaning that they still worshipped Hashem in the temples that Yerovam ben Nevat had erected for that purpose in Beit El and Dan, the northernmost and southernmost city in the country. In the next two psukim, in Psukim Dalet and Hay, verses 4 and 5, we're told that the king of Moab at this time was named Mesha, and that during Achav's reign, Moab had paid a very heavy tax to Malchut Yisrael, but that upon Achav's death, Mesha rebelled against Malchut Yisrael. By mentioning Mesha's rebellion immediately after describing the heavy tax he had paid to Achav, the text implies that this rebellion entailed his stopping his payment of taxes to Ahaziyahu. However, perhaps we can learn a lot more about the nature of this rebellion from what has become known as the Mesha Stele, which is an ancient stone slab discovered in Jordan in 1868 and currently located in the Louvre in Paris, which is engraved with Moabite text written by Mesha Melech Moab himself. And the discovery of this stele was so remarkable since it strongly corroborates our story as it appears in this parak, and it even mentions Shem Havaya, the name of Hashem. What does Mesha say in this stele? He proclaims that Omri, the king of Malchut Yisrael, oppressed Moab for many days, angering the Moabi god Chemosh, and that Omri's son then succeeded him, which is an obvious if nameless reference to Achav himself, and continued his father's aggression against Moab, occupying Moabi cities. Mesha then continues to describe his reconquering of those cities, in addition to conquering Malchut Yisrael's own cities, and killing all of the Israelite warriors inside and offering the women and the spoils within those cities to Chemosh. And so based on what we know from the Mesha steal, Mesha's rebellion during Ahaziyahu's reign was apparently much more than just stopping to pay taxes, right? It seems that Mesha really successfully reconquered Moabi cities and even conquered several of Malchut Yisrael's cities and killed many members of Bnei Yisrael in the process. And he really clearly attributed all of his successes against Ahaziyahu to his own god Chemosh, which is an important aspect of the Mesha steal, which will become significant soon. In Pasuk Vav, in verse 6, we're told that Yehoram wanted to recapture Moab after this rebellion and reinstate his sovereignty over them, likely wanting to recapture his own cities that he lost and to reconquer the Moabite cities that he lost, that his brother had lost as well. And so we're told that he gathered all of Bnei Yisrael, and then in Pasuk Zion, in verse 7, he reached out to his ally, Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda, requesting that he join him in the battle as well. To which Yehoshaphat responded with enthusiasm. And it's interesting because Yehoshaphat was not actually rebuked for this particular alliance, despite the fact that he was rebuked several times for his alliances with Achav and Ahaziyahu before this. This time was different because Yehoram was a much better king spiritually than his brother and father were, and so Hashem wasn't as angered by this particular alliance between Yehoshaphat, the righteous king of Malchut Yehuda, and Yehoram, the not as evil king of Malchut Yisrael as his brother and father were. So we're told that Yehoram and Yehoshaphat traveled together Derech Midbar Edom, the way of the wilderness of Edom, and that the king of Edom actually joined their alliance as well. However, as they are traveling with all three armies, they encountered a major problem because they were traveling through the Midbar, and for 7 days on their way to Moab, they didn't have any water. And so we're told that Yehoram cried out in Pasuk Yud in verse 10 that the lack of water must symbolize Hashem's decision to deliver the three allied kings into the hands of Moab. But in Pasuk Yud Aleph in verse 11, Yehoshaphat responded, "Ha'in po navi la'Hashem, v'nidrashat Hashem me'oto? Is there no prophet of God here from whom we can inquire of Hashem?" And so we see that not for the first time, Yehoshaphat requested of the king from Beit Achav that they consult a Navi who can help them in their predicament. But unlike his father Achav, Yehoram did not attempt to seek out a Nevi'e Sheker at all or Neveh Baal. Instead, one of Yehoram's servants responded to Yehoshaphat's question that Elisha, who was Eliyahu's primary student, was there in the camp with them. And again, unlike his father Ahab, Yehoram did not disparage the Navi Emmet suggested, but rather gave his tacit approval for Elisha to be consulted. Initially, when the three kings called together upon Elisha, Elisha responded by telling Yehoram to seek out his parents' prophets, in other words, to go to the Neveh Baal, the prophets of the Baal, or to go to the Neveh Sheker, the false prophets, for help, just as his father had. And Yehoram responded to Elisha negatively and even invoked Hashem's name to explain their current dilemma. And in the end, Elisha said that he would help them, but only due to the presence of the righteous king Yehoshaphat. And then Elisha proceeded to make an interesting request in Pasuk Tet Vav in verse 15. And he said, "Va'ata kechuli minagin," and now bring me a musician. Why would Elisha ask for a musician? So the Rambam explains in Hilchot Yesodei HaTorah, Perek Zayin Halacha Dalid, in a way that will help us hopefully understand Elisha's interesting request here. The Rambam says, "She'en ha-nevuah shora, lo mitoch atzvut, v'lo mitoch atzlut, ela mitoch simcha." Prophecy doesn't rest upon the prophet through sadness or through laziness, rather through happiness. "Lefichach, b'nei ha-nevi'im lifnehem, nevel v'tov v'chalil v'chinor, v'him mevakshem ha-nevuah." Therefore, Navi students have before them the harp, the tambourine, the flute, the lyre, when they seek out prophecy. And so it seems that just as many of us experience today, music has always had the unique ability to put someone into a better mood. And therefore, music can actually be utilized to enhance a person's connection to Hashem. As the Rambam explained, music was used historically by prophets to bring them to a state of increased happiness in order to enhance their readiness to receive prophecy. And perhaps for the same reason, we know that music was central to the Avodah and the Beit HaMikdash as well, likely in order to enhance B'nai Yisrael's happiness and therefore connection to Hashem while they were serving him, because that was the ultimate goal of the Beit HaMikdash. And the music worked exactly as Elisha had anticipated. We're told, and it was when the musician played and the hand of God was upon him. And Elisha then prophesied in the following psukim, Tetzayin through Chav, verses 16 through 20, that an abundance of water would arrive miraculously in this midbar without either wind or rain, and that the three allied kings would be victorious over Moab. Now, we can understand why Yehoram wanted to defeat Moab. He desired to restore his lost territory, his lost tax money, and through that, he would be restoring his dynasties and his nation's strength and pride. In other words, Yehoram had political and military motivations. But the question that we're left with is, why did Hashem care? Why did Hashem want B'nai Yisrael to defeat Moab? Why was this so important to God? And so perhaps this could be viewed as a reward for Yehoram's acting in such contradistinction to his father Ahav and his brother Ahaziahu, who are really so disrespectful to Hashem's Nevi'im, because Yehoram, in contrast, acted perfectly respectfully to Elisha, not even responding at all after Elisha publicly disparaged him, which is pretty impressive. Or perhaps we can understand it based on the Misha Steel that we described earlier, understanding that Hashem desired this in order to teach Misha a lesson once and for all about Hashem's sovereignty over Chemosh. Because as we saw in the Misha Steel, Misha had attributed all of his successes against Ahaziahu to his own god, Chemosh. So it actually makes a lot of sense that Hashem would want to correct this mistake and educate him regarding the one true God, as we see Hashem often doing throughout all of Sefer Melachim. When pagan kings explicate their belief that their gods are more powerful than Hashem, Hashem almost always responds in a very supernatural, miraculous way to make it very, very clear who is really in charge. And this can also help explain why Elisha told the kings to destroy every last inch of Moab's land, including their trees and their springs of water. This appears to directly contradict the pasuk in Devarim, Perachav Pasuk Yotet, that explicitly forbids B'nai Yisrael from destroying the trees in enemy lands. The pasuk says, "Ki tatzor el ir yamim rabim lihilachim aleha letafsa," when you besiege a city for many days to fight against it, to capture it, "lo tashrit etzitza lindoach alav garzen," do not destroy its trees by wielding an axe upon it, "ki mimenu tochil ve'oto lo techro," for from it you shall eat, but you shall not cut it down, "ki ha'adam etz hasadeh lavo mipanecha b'matzor," because man is like the tree of the field to come before you in the siege. And so if the Torah so explicitly in Sefer Devarim forbids B'nai Yisrael from cutting down trees in enemy territory, why on earth did Elisha instruct them to do exactly that? And perhaps it's for the same reason as before, that Hashem wanted to demonstrate to Misha, without a shadow of a doubt, who is indeed in control, that it's Hashem and not Chemosh. Unlike B'nai Yisrael's previous victory over Aram in Melachim Aleph Perachav, after which Ahav let Ben-Hadad go and therefore obscured Hashem's victory, Hashem wanted to make sure that this time his victory would remain certain and clear. And because Mesha had turned his battles against Malchut Yisrael into a battle of their gods, Hashem wanted to make sure that Mesha knew clearly which god was more powerful, not Chemosh, rather Hashem. Everything that Elisha prophesied then came to fruition in Psukim Chaf Bet through Chafav, verses 22 through 26, and Bnei Yisrael successfully won the war against Moab. The last pasuk of the Perek, Pasuk of Zion, verse 27, ends with a strange and ambiguous statement about the king sacrificing his eldest son, who should have been his successor, upon the wall, which resulted in a major wrath being brought upon Bnei Yisrael. And it's very unclear whether this is referring to the king of Moab or to the king of Edom, because both kings are referenced in the preceding pasuk, and so it's really not clear. It's really very ambiguous which king we're talking about, whose son it is, who would have been whose successor, and also why was there so much wrath upon Bnei Yisrael because of this action of one of those kings. And so many Parshanim comment on this. Rashi understands this to mean that Mesha, Melech Moav, sacrificed his eldest son to his god, Chemosh, in an attempt to curry his favor so that he could win the war against Bnei Yisrael that he was obviously losing. But this made Hashem very angry with Bnei Yisrael, since it reminded him of the Avodah Zarah that Bnei Yisrael were still involved in themselves. Many, many other Parshanim, Mitzudat David, the Radak, quoting his father, the Maharikara, the Abarbanel, etc., believe that it was actually not Mesha doing this. They explain that before this war, Mesha, the king of Moab, had previously captured the eldest son of the king of Edom, and that's actually the main reason why the king of Edom joined up with the alliance of Yehoram and Yehoshaphat in the hopes that he would be able to get back his son from Moab after they defeated Moab. However, when Mesha realized that he couldn't overcome the king of Edom along with Yehoshaphat and Yehoram, right, the kings of Malchut Yehuda and Malchut Yisrael, Mesha, I guess in a last attempt to kind of demonstrate his power, took the eldest son of the king of Moab that he had previously captured and sacrificed him upon the wall so that the king of Edom could see what he was doing to his own son. And then afterwards, obviously, the king of Edom became extremely angry, and he directed his wrath towards Bnei Yisrael because he felt like this happened as a result of his helping them in war against Moab, and then he became very angry with them. And then the parak ends with Bnei Yisrael's soldiers returning home from the war back to Eretz Yisrael. This year is dedicated by Michelle Levine and Susan Schuster and their families in memory of their beloved mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother, Rebbetzin Gloria Leff, Golda Tzivia Bat Baruch. Rebbetzin Leff was a highly regarded principal and Torah teacher, a master educator, whose deep love for teaching Tanakh inspired hundreds of students throughout their lifetime.